Into the Fold is a podcast on mental health issues, produced by the Hauck Foundation for Mental Health. The Hauck Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, a podcast on mental health issues. I am your host, Ike Evans, and today we're talking about Young Minds Matter. In fact, the problem of young minds is a big enough one to occupy an entire event's worth of attention. The background buzz that you're hearing is from Young Minds Matter 2019, an event put on by the Hauck Foundation in Houston. The theme for the event was Community Connections for Well-Being. I thought we'd begin this little journey by pulling that phrase apart, community connections for well-being, and then putting it back together again if we can. Community is familiar enough to us, or is it? Anyway, I want to know what it means for a community to connect, and then I want to know what it means to connect for well-being. Pieces to this puzzle abound here at Young Minds Matter. Here's a small one from one of our guests for this episode, Dr. Howard Pinderhughes.
That there are elements of communities that get impacted by structural violence, violence that happens at the institutional level in our schools, in our economy, in our criminal justice system.
Now, if I've come to appreciate anything from my time here at the Hauck Foundation, it is that a mind is a community project. Any mind, really, but young minds especially. We connect with others in our community, not just to be uplifted, but to help us get a handle on some of the heavier stuff that Dr. Pinderhughes, for one, is an expert on. We'll be catching up to Howard a little bit later in our story, but I was thinking that I would find for us a bit more accessible, more artistic, a point of entry for this conversation, like poetry. Our first guest, Marlon Lezama, is a Houston spoken word artist and co-founder of the Iconoclast Artist Program that focuses on empowering youth in underserved schools and incarcerated youth through the arts. I thought that I would give you a taste of what he's all about and then jump right to our interview at Young Minds Matter.
Where I'm from, we live in summer. We speak in family tongues about family through neighbors' eyes. Our dialects change through ever-changing barrios, cuadras, calles, y casas ajenas. Where I'm from, La Lechuza, El Diablo, and La Llorona all become curfews, and there is no talk of American birds and bees. Reputations follow you like 14-year-old backpacks on our 14-year-old soldiers. Where I'm from, education is a thought as crazy as equality. Tree branches become a sign of disciplinary actions. Moms are mommies, tias are titis, grandpas are popos, fathers have always been gone. Where I'm from, music is our narrator, moving us like revolution once did. Young developing flowers, shaking and stepping to beasts they do not understand yet. Perversion is an uncle not allowed near the kids, but is always welcome to home. Where I'm from, the dinner table is time of conferences of who needs to go get a job, who needs to go get some water, or who just needs to go. Sana, sana, culito, the ranas are doctor. Mosquitoes are always ignored, for the immune system of our ancestors is too strong. Where I'm from, neck dirt necklaces tell you when it's time to go in, along with, because you see, where I'm from, everyone is Christian and has a Catholic neighbor. Love is what is allowed, or how good a young couple is sneaking around. Babies make babies and make families close. And my chest is even closer. Where I'm from, my grandmother is beautiful. Aunts and uncles are extended parents, and everyone has a right to beat your butt. Boom, toma. Where I'm from is yellow, purple, green, and gold. And it is beautiful.
So why don't you tell our listeners who you are and just give us a sense of your journey and how you wound up performing in front of us.
So my name is Marlon Lezama. I am a poet. I am a writer. I'm an artist. And I'm also a co-founder of an organization called Iconoclast Artists, where we focus on creative writing and social emotional learning. And I have been working with the community for the last 15 years, just working in some sort of level with the community. Finally decided to create an organization that focused on storytelling and creative writing, and we decided to work with underserved schools and at-risk youth and also with youth that are incarcerated.
Poetry is such a wide-ranging art. Tell us about some of the major themes or concerns that find their way into your work.
So the how I use poetry is, in the beginning, it was to tell immigrant stories. It was to basically tell people where I came from and who I was and about my culture and about my family. So it was kind of a perspective of being a historian to my neighborhood and to who we were. And so I guess if I was to choose a theme, it was a very Latinx cultured, you know, theme.
The event is Young Minds Matter, Community Connections for Well-Being. What does a phrase like that invoke for you?
Every time I hear something like that, I think about myself as a young person, and what that invokes in me is basically the whole child, right? Not leaving any part of a child out. Is a complete child. So it's not only focusing on making sure you're going to school, but making sure you're okay, right? And taking the time out to really see every single student in a school and just asking, like, is this kid okay? Is this person okay? Like, how are you doing? What's going on at home? You know, how else can we help you besides, you know, give you something to eat or offer you education?
Okay. And so what were some key personal milestones in the development of both your art and your views on mental health?
One of the main ones was traveling, leaving. That was huge for me, because simply when you grow up in an at-risk neighborhood or an environment where inspiration doesn't exist, or where art and culture that's not a priority in people's homes, and it's about survival. It's basically about paying rent and making it to the next day. One of the biggest milestones for me is just leaving and understanding that the world is not a scary place and people are not scary, you know, and being able to be inspired by other people and other cultures.
Okay, so where are you off to after this? You're going to have to get out of here pretty soon. How can people follow what you're doing?
People can always follow me on, I really focus on Instagram. So it's just Marley, the creative, M-A-R-L-E-Y, the creative. And I'm going straight to France, right after this. And, I still dance. I'm still a dancer and we still do theater. And so I have a crew out of Houston, Texas that we are still focusing on the arts and we still travel to this day. And so we go do competitions and performances and shows. So I'm going straight to France.
Okay. Poet Marlon Lezama, we are so glad our paths could cross here in Houston at Young Minds Matter. The audience loved you. We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Jumping back to Marlon's poem, I want to dwell for just a second on that where I come from theme. For young people of color, there is often a rich tension between honoring where we come from while embracing where we're going. It's not just that where we come from might be backward or uncool, or doesn't contain enough abundance or things to do or whatever, but that the places we come from are also in part shaped by traumatic legacies that we may be trying to get out from under. Young people of color feel this to be true even before they can articulate it well. This would be a good time to catch back up with the man we heard from in the intro, Dr. Howard Pinderhughes. He is chair of the Department of Social and Behavioral Science at University of California, San Francisco, and a research associate at the Institute for the Study of Social Change at UC Berkeley. We sat down for a conversation at Young Minds Matter. Okay, so Howard, first of all, thank you for the awesome session. And we're so glad that you could make it here to Houston for Young Minds Matter to have a conversation with us about community trauma.
Absolutely.
Happy to have you. So as you use the term, community trauma is more than just the aggregate of individual traumas in a community. So what more does community trauma include?
Well, as we've been doing this work over the last 15 years, communities have expressed that they are filled with trauma. And what they mean usually is that there's a whole lot of people in the community who are traumatized. What we've come to understand through the work, as well as through my personal experience growing up in Roxbury in Boston, and watching a community, watching my community go from a vibrant mixed race, mixed income community to a poor black community with no economic infrastructure and with tremendous amount of poverty, and ultimately became the youth murder capital of the United States, that there are elements of communities that get impacted by structural violence, violence that happens at the institutional level in our schools, in our economy, in our criminal justice system, and in all of the institutions we have in society that impact our communities in the social relationships and the social networks that are that exist in healthy communities, in the built environment. Watched Roxbury go from a vibrant community to one with which had no economic infrastructure, no stores, lots of boarded up buildings, and parks that were dangerous for people to play to be in, and that those elements of community are important in terms of being able to help people heal from trauma and be resilient in the face of adversity. And so we need to heal communities at the community level while we're trying to heal individuals.
Okay, so you said a little bit about where you come from. So one question that I have is, what became clearer about your own experience once you started thinking in terms of community trauma?
Well, you know, like I said, I grew up in Roxbury in Boston, Massachusetts, and it became a very violent community. And I had friends who didn't survive into adulthood or were incarcerated. And, you know, it was a consistent question, why? And I became a sociologist because I was interested in those answers and also in trying to find solutions. And in coming to understand this, it came from going to other places, doing research on violence in different communities in on the West Coast, in San Francisco and Oakland, and then doing policy work around the country and seeing similar things that were going on in different communities around the country and similar ways that communities had experienced disinvestment and flight of people with money and capital and resources and governments, disinvestment, and it became clear to me that there was something going on at the community level that was systemic and institutional in nature that was producing the violence and trauma that was so much a part of what I saw growing up.
So even though community trauma is not reducible to individual experience, it still conditions how individuals relate to one another, I would think.
And that's a part of it.
Yeah.
That's a part of it. I mean, community trauma is also the way in which structures and systems relate to specific populations and communities.
Sure.
And so when you see black and brown populations that are not getting the resources and are not getting the investment and the schools are not as good in those communities, there's a systematic and institutional reason. And so that happens at the individual level, but it also happens at the systemic and institutional level.
Okay. And so How does the concept of community trauma supply what is missing in the discourse around violence in Black communities?
Well, what I'll say is that the discourse around violence used to be dominated by a criminal justice frame. And so it was we understood violence as bad things that were done by bad people who came from bad neighborhoods who had bad values. And we've changed that frame somewhat and started to understand that this issue of individual trauma is something that we have to take into account when we start to look at why people do what they do and why people can behave in a violent manner. So the adverse childhood experiences study provided a real understanding of the scope and the nature of trauma from adverse experiences as a child, and that it has impacts on how you are as an adult psychologically, emotionally, and your physical health and well-being. And so we've come to understand that there's an individual level component, but we're still dominated by the idea that individuals make decisions to do violence, and that we have a hard time understanding what happens at an institutional and structural level that creates the conditions whereby violence is not necessarily inevitable, but it's a higher likelihood.
Okay, so this has been Dr. Howard Pinderhughes of University of California, San Francisco. We're talking about community trauma here in Houston at Young Minds Matter. Dr. Pinderhughes, thank you so much for taking the time to share your wisdom with us and our listeners. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Ike.
Hi, everyone. My name is Abina Sari, and I'm with Prevention Institute based in Oakland, California. I'm really excited to be here at the Young Minds Matter Conference to just hear the really important and impactful conversations that are had among the participants.
I really enjoyed being at this presentation or at this conference just because I feel like I learned a lot. It helped me find not only some things and qualities I liked within myself, but some things that I feel as if I can work on to better myself as a person. Growing up, I knew that mental health was a very important thing, especially with my mother working in this field. And coming to different conferences and varying times, I learned something new every single time, and it's even helped me find that I wanted to continue a career in this area, in this field. And just being here really helped me because it allows me to not only help myself grow, but help the people around me that may not have the resources or the materials or knowledge to continue to be great and better their own mental health.
The voices you just heard belong to Abina Asair and Samaj Fletcher, both of whom attended Young Minds Matter and both of whom were kind enough to share their thoughts with me. So where are we now? We've established that where I come from, where we come from, maybe even where you come from, has something to do with trauma, as little as we may want to dwell on that. We've also established, thanks to our conversation with Howard Pinderhughes, that trauma does not just implicate one's personal biography, but the collective history of a place or a scene. Young people can carry the burden of traumas that ripple and contort the community fabric from even before they were born. I mean, one thing that I took from our final guest, Nia West Bay, is this idea that we will continue to tread water on the deepest problems that beset us as long as we insist on being ahistoric in our thinking. Dr. Nia West Bay is a senior policy analyst with the Center for Law and Social Policy, or CLASP. Her focus is on youth and young adult mental health. The jumping off point for our conversation is a blog post that she recently wrote, which you can find on the Hogg Foundation website, titled Young Minds Matter, Historical and Cultural Trauma. So you recently wrote a blog post for us, Young Minds Matter, Historical and Cultural Trauma. And in it, you lead off with this quote by a young person. is like everything all right with our people. So what ideas or concerns does a quote like that encapsulate?
I think it really raises the sort of the issue of how when young people are not given the language, don't have the analysis, when our whole perspective is ahistorical, how it puts young people in this position of turning the community conditions that they experience and looking back at themselves and saying, is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with my people? When you're not sort of given the context and the historical context to understand why conditions are the way they are, what are all the factors that have led things to be the way that they are now, then young people are sort of left out in the world wondering, okay, well, if it's like this, and if it's like this for people who look like me, then there must be something wrong with us. When your experience is not reflected in the classroom, in media, in the news, or when it is reflected negatively, it can make you wonder, is it me? Is there something wrong with us? And that's really harmful to young people and to their identity development. And so that quote, I think, is really powerful because it flags both sort of the ways in which historical erasure and disconnection from history are harmful to young people and to their identities, as well as the importance and the power that there is for young people in having language to be able to talk about that.
Just to kind of have it revealed in all the ways that it can be, that you come from somewhere, and not that the place you come from is necessarily pretty, but it may hold answers that just, you know, marveling at present conditions doesn't do, I guess is one way of putting that.
Exactly. And where we talked so much about the importance of family and reverence for grandparents and all that sort of thing. But without that connection to the family story, and or in some cases where your family story has been forcibly taken from you, and that there was a reason that people did that, right? Because those connections to your history are powerful.
So yeah, talking about family forcibly taken from you. So that's, I guess, an example of a historical trauma. And that's something that you talk about quite a bit. So I wonder how it is that you tend to define historical trauma as well as cultural trauma and how they interrelate.
Yeah, and I think the simplest way to think about it is today's cultural trauma is tomorrow's historical trauma. Mm-hmm. I think the main difference is that historical trauma usually talks about things that happened to a group collectively in the past. So, and it could be 50, 100, 200 years ago, but something that happened a long time ago. Versus cultural trauma tends to be more things that are happening in the present. So an example that came up in one of the workshops today was sort of the number of hurricanes that have happened in the Houston area in the last couple of years, and sort of the trauma that that causes for young people. Or even an example in some of the focus groups was the role of the church in different communities and how that is for young people who feel excluded by the church. And so those things, if not addressed and not properly resolved, then a generation from now will be looking at historical trauma from those cultural traumas.
Okay, and you said you're eager to answer this one. Okay.
Yeah.
So I often wonder about the tension between paying due respect to the traumatic past and not wanting to fetishize it. For African Americans especially, it is often said, sometimes in a loving way and sometimes not, that we love our wounds a little bit too much. And so what have you learned about the different ways that trauma survivors walk that line?
Yeah, so I thought the setup of that question was really interesting to me, because what I actually feel happens for African Americans in this country is that we have this gaping wound that is open, that has never been treated properly, that in fact is ripped open repeatedly by contemporary events. And so that we have this whole thing going on our arm that is festering and painful and makes it difficult for us to do what we need to do in our daily lives. And then we're being told to pretend like it's not there. I don't think this is about loving wounds. I think it's that this country has never atoned for creating the wound, has never tended to the wound, has never taken the steps to address it, to dress it, to care for it, to heal it. And until that happens, it's not reasonable to say to anybody that, oh, that's in the past, or let's just move on. The thing is still right there on your arm today, right now, and being aggravated on a regular basis. So with all due respect, people might think they're being loving when they're saying that, but that's actually an erasure of African-American people's experience in this country.
So, thanks. Yes, I was so looking forward to your answer to that one. So you work in policy. Mm-hmm. How do you infuse these perspectives into your day-to-day work?
And I definitely want to be clear about this. It is not the norm for these kinds of perspectives to inform policy on a regular basis. And I think that is both because of who historically has made policy in this country, who is consulted, whose perspectives are taken into account when policymaking happens. But because we haven't paid attention to these perspectives, that's why we keep getting what we've always got, or having unintended consequences of our policy choices. So I think I see part of my role is sort of bringing young people's voices and perspectives and impacted people's voices and perspectives into spaces that they might not have access to, or making sure that it influences decision making in ways that it wouldn't have been able to in the past.
Okay, so we're having a conversation with Dr. Nia West Bay here in Houston at Young Minds Matter 2019. We did have our earlier conversation with Dr. Howard Pinder Hughes on community trauma. So finishing off the trifecta, we've talked about historical trauma, we've talked about cultural trauma, and we just really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to visit with us here on the podcast. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been great to have the opportunity to share today.
So let's recap. I started by confronting us with the question of, what does it mean for communities to connect for well-being? That was, after all, the theme for this year's Young Minds Matter. From that starting point, we ended up talking about poetry and policy and sociology and personal, collective, historical trauma. Really, way too much to unpack for just a 20-minute podcast. So what we're left with is not a solution to the puzzle so much as a working hypothesis. And here it is. For communities to connect for the well-being of young people, what needs to happen is the establishment of a venue for a meaningful conversation between past trauma, present uncertainty, and future hope. One that places each of these elements in some kind of thoughtful exposure to the other two, and does so with an eye toward healing, yes, but also inspiring action toward greater justice. This is what truly being for well-being calls us to, and this is one thing that is implied by caring for young minds. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can find related resources for this conversation in the episode description. And please leave us a review and subscribe to us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or TuneIn. Thank you very much.